Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to Audible.com/HamNation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 258 for July 27th, 2016. Nick Tusa and Bob report on the Vintage Boat Anchor Weekend. Hello, everybody. It's K9EID, and you are watching Ham Nation, and you're listening to Ham Nation if you're on the podcast. And we have a great show again tonight. Lots of good stuff. And to kick it off here, we'll first of all, let's go around and see who all's going to be here before we really get into it. And we got Gordo down in Costa Mesa. How you doing, Gordo?
I am doing just fine, and we are here with exciting news. Back to you, Bob.
Hey, you've been working Hawaii on 2 meters. How can you do that? George, can you work Hawaii on 2 meters?
Not unless I stand on top of a ladder. That's with my handy talkie. That's kind of hard to do. I've got just a brief follow-up to my hard tales from the transmitter site that we did last week.
Okay. And what's going on with Don? Are you down fighting alligators? What are you doing this week?
No, we're not, but it has been rainy, which, of course, means it's a little bit swampy out here. As a matter of fact, we've got a picture of what's going on. See, I mean, that's how wet it is down here. That's how wet it is down here. We've had 3 days of rain. Parky, one of the guys over at DX Engineering, mocked that up and sent that to us, and we're pretty upset about it, to be quite frank. No, it's funny stuff. No, it's been raining here lately, but it's kept the heat down. But now we're back to our normal 20% chance of rain, which means 90 to 95 with about a 70% humidity. And so it's just going to be miserable. But that's all right, because we've got some cool news coming up from Amateur Radio Newsline a little bit later.
Okay. We will be listening. I'm going to be joined by K5EF, Nick Tusa, who is the instigator that put all of this wonderful weekend together. We had such a great time at the late West Shums Farm, where we gathered all these vintage boat anchor rigs. And it was a weekend of history, and we're going to get into that. I've got a whole bunch of pictures, and we'll run through them quickly. But we're going to be joined with Nick in a while. But first, I want to hear more about this Hawaii stuff. So, Gordo, let's hear what you've been doing today.
Well, it's been exciting, and in just a moment, you'll both hear it and see it, Bob. Coming up August 7th, word of the 82nd annual Hamfesters Hamfest. It's going to be at the Will County Fairgrounds in Piotone, Illinois. Thanks, Kurt, WB9FMC, for that info. And, of course, August 20 and 21, Don and I, and maybe others on our cast, will see you at Huntsville. And at Huntsville, August 20 and 21, Saturday and Sunday, I present on Saturday the Instructor Academy. Then a week later, August 28, Sunday, Western Connecticut, they'll have their Ham Fest at the Edmond Town Hall. And then, of course, Boxborough in September. That's a great Ham Fest, September 9, 10, and 11. But beside Ham Fest, we had a lot of comments in the chat room trying to figure out Don's malady. Well, it's not really Don's malady. So let's go ahead, Brian, and take a look at Don's malady machine. Now, notice,
That's not a malady. That's a firebird.
Oh, that's right. I have.
Thank you.
The fire.
I'll be here all week.
There's malady under the hood.
No, not that one. The new one.
There's a Malibu, not a Malady. That's my unit. We're both with 454s, and doggone it, don't you hate when the rats or the mice or whatever gets in there and eats up the wiring? So, chat room, I would like to thank you very much for sharing with me the latest ad that I think will really hit home for Don. So, Don, here is the cure. First of all, if your rats like mine have chewed away at the microphone on your 76 vehicle.
Oh, my.
Or if they've munched away, here you go. Don, you can keep small critters out from under your car. And, Don, did that little varmint look anything like this? If so, possibly the chainsaw could take him out.
Yeah, I need the ultrasonic.
That's funny.
So if the ultrasonic won't do it, one of our viewers said, let's try the tornado chainsaw. If that doesn't work, at the 3-in-1 solar animal repeller. So we are here for you, Don. And if you do use the chainsaw, just think, we've got all sorts of things that we can feed the agilators later on. So, Don, we are with you. And, Ryan, if you don't mind, just for a moment, come back to a live shot here. Don, look what I found. This is from E.F. Johnson back in the CB radio days. And this is a complete stainless steel wire kit. And if that little muncher gets through that, he's got better teeth than we do. All right, Brian,
I just like to say one thing, Gordon, and to you and everybody who has been talking about my mouse problem with my cars, and to Parkey for making that lovely image. I used to like you people.
Oh, boy. All right, Brian, let's head back to the short shots. And yeah, that's what we'll look like if we mess with Don again. Well, you could try a cat, Don. One of our cats would be willing to maybe take a drive back there in the 76 Chevy I've got. And
that looks like two of your cats.
Yeah, we do. We do feed them well with rats and mice. All right, Brian. Well, take a listen to the excitement that's going on right now. The Hawaiian Beacon, 2,500 miles away, is coming in on VHF and UHF. And the same propagation called tropospheric ducting occurs from New England all the way down to Florida. It occurs from Florida to Texas. It occurs in the plains, all over the place. So what we're talking about today is not just here in Southern Cal, but all over. What occurs is a warm air mass is a high-pressure system. That air subsiding, called subsidence, bottoms out about 100 feet to 1,000 feet above the cool air along the Earth, and it stratifies. And when you stratify different substances, you alter the characteristics of what would normally be line of sight. And as you can see here, unmixed fluids tend to find a balance. And look what happens to that laser. It is no longer a straight line, but will rather follow the tropospheric duct for literally hundreds, if not thousands, of miles away. Usually here in Southern Cal, as well as in Florida, we encounter tropospheric ducting over thousands of miles on 2 meters, 220, 432, 902, and 1200 when there is a hurricane to the south. That helps create the many different layers. Now, here's a site that all of you need to go to. It's called DX Info Center, and center is spelled C-E-N-T-R-E. Where you see the pink and the yellows, that's going to be good propagation. But a few days ago, where my thumb is pointing to Hawaii, or maybe that's my middle finger. Anyway, pointing toward Hawaii, no propagation. But starting yesterday, guess what we're beginning to hear on 2 meters? In fact, let me turn up the 2 meter radio right here in the shack. Now you hear that little whoop. That's on purpose, so we know it's really coming from Hawaii. And here's the 432 beacon. And, of course, a lot of radar. But imagine in Hawaii, these automatic beacons going 2,500 miles with only about 20 or 30 watts of power to be received by the West Coast. So the Hawaiian beacon has been coming in now that we see the propagation on dxinfocenter.com/tropo. There it is at the top of the chart. See all the reds and yellows and oranges? That goes all the way to Hawaii. And wow, we have propagation, and we did make some contacts to Hawaiian hams. And it even works on FM as well. So you can imagine the surprise when someone points their antennas and they make an FM call to another FMer. But the real CW and sideband work is done horizontal. And here's my stack of horizontal beams pointed toward Hawaii. That's 432 in the background. And so far, the very best we've ever done was many years ago when conditions just like today actually promoted all this to amateur television, slow scan TV and fast scan TV. This was a fast scan picture at 434 megahertz. Amazing as to what happens. So when we have a high-pressure system that builds in over an area, there's very little wind, and it's hot and sticky, that's the time to turn on your 2-meter rig, maybe tune around and pick up some weather stations that are hundreds, if not 1,000 miles away on one of the 7 weather channels, and try different repeaters not in your area, and you may be surprised. You're talking 400, 500, and 600 miles. So when the high-pressure system sets up, and the weather layers, not the ionosphere, but the weather layers begin to stack up one on top of the other, squeezing the air to a 10-degree delta change in the middle. That's where your VHF and UHF radio waves will go and go and go. So, Don, I've got your Hallett kit right here already for you. So when you're ready to have me ship it to you, I'll send it via cat or rat to you. Don, over to you.
Yeah, I'll get back with you and tell you just where you can put that thing.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let's go ahead and check in. Thank you, Gordon. Let's go ahead and check in with Amateur Radio Newsline, shall we? From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2021, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, July 27th, 2016. As the current Amateur Radio Newsline report went to production, we were hearing conflicting reports over the state of amateur radio licenses in Turkey. Jim Dameron, N8TMW, has more.
Early reports indicated that the airwaves had gone silent after Turkish President Recep Erdogan ordered the Supreme Council of Radio and Television to revoke 3,213 ham licenses, along with those of more than 20 TV and radio broadcasters. Word came to Amateur Radio Newsline on Thursday, July 21st, that Turkey's sweeping restrictions against radio and TV operations had not yet affected that nation's amateur licenses. One Turkish amateur, Tefik TA1HZ, reported to us in an email, quote, "As of this time, there is no curfew imposed on amateur radio in Turkey. The country is now under extraordinary circumstances law. But BTK, the communications authority, has not released any announcement about ham radio restrictions," end quote. Tefik, a Turkish physician, added, quote, "There is no information about any restrictions for amateur radio," end quote.
More in future Newsline reports. Now an update on the Hayden Pass fire that has burned more than 16,000 acres in Colorado's Fremont County.
Amateur Radio Newsline's Amanda Alden Carrier, K1DDN, the Ares Emergency Coordinator for the county, sent an update to Newsline on Wednesday, July 20th, 12 days after lightning first sparked the deadly wildfire. Amanda told us that Colorado Ares amateurs remained active through Friday, July 15th, and handled all traffic via the DTR system on 800 megahertz. She said in an email that, quote, "These wildfires spread so quickly that it reminds all of us to be ready to answer the call for help in a matter of minutes, not hours." According to various news reports, evacuees were allowed back home Tuesday, July 19th. Amanda told us one day later that the second part of the Ares activation remained on standby with the possibility of staffing the Red Cross shelters. With Amanda in the field, Newsline will have more on this story as it develops.
Let's catch up with the latest in radio scouting.
This week in Radio Scouting, we have a special event station coming on the air in Michigan and updates on the National Jamboree. Richard Zarczynski, AC8FJ, will be the control operator for the portable 8 station at the Michigan International Camporee at the Northwoods Scout Reservation in Lupton, Michigan, from July 24th to July 31st. This special camporee, occurring once every 4 years, has scouts from over 20 countries as well as from 14 U.S. states. Richard will have a special event station set up to let other amateurs know on various frequencies about the event. Jim Wilson, K5ND, announced that the K2BSA has secured sponsorship for the National Jamboree in 2017 from ICOM America, DX Engineering, and MFJ Enterprises. Congratulations to the team at Camp Geiger for making it on the news. Fox 26 KNPN did a video segment on the scouts finishing their week of radio merit badge work at camp. Please help support this activity and others involving youth and amateur radio by working and spotting them on the air and online. For more information on K2BSA and radio scouting, please visit k2bsa.net. For Amateur Radio Newsline and the K2BSA Amateur Radio Association, this is Bill Stearns, NE4RD.
Finally this week, get well wishes for a friend of Newsline and DXers everywhere.
Pasquale Lagamba, IZ8IYX, chief editor of DX Coffee, the Italian-based amateur radio magazine, has been hospitalized following an accident in which he was struck by a car while en route to work. Although Pasquale survived, he will have to undergo 2 surgeries. We here at Amateur Radio Newsline would like to wish Pasquale a swift and complete recovery.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for 4 decades and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Jim Dameron, N8TMW, Bill Stearns, NE4RD, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wellbanks, AE5DW. 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. And some good stuff from Newsline this week. We don't have a report from Dr. Tamitha Scove this week. Her schedule has been fairly hectic, so she did not have time to put together anything for us. But you can always check her out on Twitter. At Tamitha Scove is a great way to keep up with her because she tweets all the time, and she also does some live stuff on Periscope as well. And we have not mentioned the winner of the Young Ham of the Year award yet because, well, we don't know who that is yet. We're in the final selection phase now, and we should hopefully have that maybe by the end of the week, almost certainly by next week. And I also understand that there is a winner has not yet been made public for this year's Hiram Percy Maxim Award. Now, I can't tell you who it is yet, but let's just say they're a friend of the show, and we're pretty excited. So I can't say any more. In fact, I've probably said too much already. But anyway, that's pretty excited about the Hiram Percy Maxim winner. And I'm going to be extremely excited, I'm sure, once I find out who the Young Ham of the Year Award winner is. So all that is coming up. And, of course, the Huntsville Ham Fest is where the Young Ham of the Year Award will be given away. And that will be on Saturday, August 20th in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope to see you there. One of the fine vendors, manufacturers, of course, at Huntsville is ICOM, another friend of the show.
Get out there and get on the air. Combine your recreational enjoyment this summer of amateur radio with the great outdoors. Join the National Parks on the Air event and celebrate our national parks turning 100 years young. Just be sure your ICOM equipment is ready for action. See how ICOM is changing the way receivers are being designed with ICOM's new IC7300. It will exceed expectations. RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, and SD memory card slot. Limited space is no problem with the IC7100 base station. It's a great compact D-Star option. Angled control head and touchscreen for quick intuitive operation, large internal speaker for clear digital audio, and it's perfect for multi-bands and all-mode communications. Simplified operation, HF and digital technology, the IC718 base station is the most practical rig you will ever own. Front-mounted loudspeaker, DSP capability, selectable antenna tuner, and simple operation. Visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on all ICOM radios.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to iComAmerica.com/HamNation and register to win for great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats. And while you're there, learn how you could be entered into the monthly grand prize drawing for July. It's the ICOM ID5100A dual band, dual watch, VHF, UHF transceiver with touchscreen. It does analog and D-Star. It's got built-in GPS, DV and FM repeater list function, available Bluetooth unit and headset, Android application, and a lot more. And I can tell you now that, this is the last week you've got to enter for that one. It's going to be drawn at the end of July. But for August, I can tell you now it's going to be the ID880H. So if you don't win this month, register again next month, and perhaps you'll win then. So go to icomamerica.com/hamnation. After this and each episode of Ham Nation, throw your name in the hat. Congratulations. Good luck. And don't forget to follow ICOM America, Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And now let's get Bob back in here and see what's been going on in the wide, wide world of boat anchors.
Yeah, you got that right. Boy, it's been a weekend for me. And it all started with our friend Nick Tusa, K5EF. Let's see. And there he is. Hi, Nick. How are you?
Hey, I just saw you this weekend, huh?
We had a great time, and I thank you so much for putting it together. To me, it was kind of a memorial to Wes Shum, and for those that aren't up on some of the happenings there with Wes, he was the man that came up with the idea of putting single sideband on amateur radio. And Nick, you knew him for a long time and worked right beside him. Is that correct?
Well, I first met him in Chicago in 1983, but prior to that, I had conversed with him by telephone and by letters since I was in high school, so I felt like I knew him. He was part of my family.
Well, it was really great, and we got to meet his wife again this year. Marge was there, and so many guys came. Some came from the West Coast, East Coast, all around the country. You worked real hard to get some of these rare pieces of gear. Some of that was just one of a kind, right?
Oh, it was. We had quite a selection of equipment to look at. A lot of prototypes and radios that had very, very limited production. For example, Johnson Avenger and a Thunderbolt 2 amplifier, which were just prototypes, never made it to production. I understand Johnson canceled that project right after they had built several evaluation models. And then we had from Bob Nichols, he was kind enough to bring down the Hallicrafters FPM 200. We had a couple of Cosmophones, just a whole variety of stuff. And, of course, some really incredible home-brewed radios that operationally rivaled some of the best constructed gear of the 50s and 60s that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I was very impressed. Well, I just wanted you to come on and say a little bit. I wanted to thank you personally, and we'll have you back on again, but I'm going to run a couple of dozen pictures here quickly, and it'll have a lot of the things that we have talked about. Here is the farm. It's just a beautiful place. I mean, it's gorgeous. And I appreciate Diane and John letting us have the run of it. That was the home that Wes lived in his late last years. And now it's a bed and breakfast. So you can, there's a happy picture. Happy picture. That's Marge and Diane and Brittany. Is that right, Nick?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, you can certainly tell Diane favors a mom, doesn't she?
And we have to talk about your cap. That cap you have on, that was his favorite cap that he wore all the ham fests. Is that right?
Well, Wes Shum always wore a hat at a ham fest, and it was his trademark. So this is the one that he and I, whenever we would go ham festing, once he moved to Tennessee, he always had this cap on. So felt it was only right that it be worn this past weekend.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And as we move in, this is some of the tents and things that they put up. Being a bed and breakfast facility, they have all of this ready. I've never been to any kind of a ham meeting that had a chandelier, but there we are, Nick. That was pretty cool. And what you can see in the background was maybe that was you or someone giving a workshop, had a whole series of workshops, and they were just wonderful. But the tent was super and had a chandelier. There's Wes. What year would that have been, do you think?
That would have been 1959. That was the time when the first 100V came off the production line.
Wow. A young W9DYV. And that is one of the rigs showed up. You want to talk a little about that one?
Well, that's actually a pre-production prototype of the 10A Exciter, which is the one that brought single sideband to in a wide range to amateur radio. And the little 10As, which had plug-in exciter coils and 5 watts peak output, those are the ones that the hams were using in large amounts in the early, very early 1950s and just starting to get interested in single sideband. Wes was the first to bring a whole system where you had an exciter followed by a linear amplifier, of course, and also a single sideband adapter so that hams with traditional equipment could operate on single sideband mode.
Yeah, the red and white knobs was to null the carrier. There's the inside of it with the plug-in coils. That that was a wonderful piece of equipment. I had built one of those. It was my first entrance to building anything significant, and it sure did change my life. But that was really fun to see that prototype. But there we go with the King. That's the 20A, which is basically the same piece of gear, but it has coils and band switches, so we didn't have to do a plug-in coil type deal. And that's what you see behind me every week. VFO is to the side. Here was an intriguing thing. Back in the days of late 40s and 50s, GE had a thing called Ham News, and it just had all kinds of fun things. And Mark, NU6X, he built this single sideband junior and brought it along. And look at this. It is just so cool. Now, he just did this a few months ago and did a magnificent job. Just super, super, super. I was so impressed, and it worked well. He was on the air, I think it was Friday night with it. And gosh, it just worked so well. Look how beautiful it is. He did such a nice job. But that's what started all of what we did in those days to get sideband going. Now, this was something I had never heard of called the Elinco X4. Little bitty box. Somebody had really worked on this one hard. Look at all the stuff they crammed in here. And it was amazing. Where did this come from, Nick?
I don't know the history of this one. I was as surprised to see it as you. It's actually a filter single sideband rig. You see those two crystals there between the two IF cans, transformers. Those are two of the four crystals. In order to save cost, they use one octal socket and plug the crystals in from the top. And if you flip the thing over, there are two more crystals that plug in from the bottom to make a four-pole crystal filter. And the idea was is that it lopped off the sideband, the unwanted sideband, but it was also positioned to null out the or filter out the carrier. So unlike the traditional phasing rigs that had balanced modulators, and of course single sideband radios, filter ones with balanced modulators, this one didn't. It relied on the filter to get rid of the unwanted sideband and the carrier.
I think I had a picture. The next picture is the bottom of it. Very, very cool. Now, here is the deal. In the day, they had dinners, and this was a single sideband dinner. What year was this? 50?
Well, it's in the early 50s. And as you can tell, this was at a, you know, part of a ham fest. And I haven't seen too many guys walking around in coat and tie at Dayton, you know?
Well, it just showed the interesting single sideband back those days. There's the next run I want you guys and gals to check out. This was aboard Fifi. And you will notice on the extreme left, there's two boxes and then three boxes. Those two boxes are BC-458s. They were transmitters. And what happened was after the war, we could get those from Fair Radio, or if you were lucky enough, get down on some of the streets in New York and buy one of those. There it is. And you can buy that for $5, maybe less. And then there was a raft of articles and all types of things written about taking that transmitter and making it a single sideband transmitter. Now, mind you, this is back 1950, 51, very early. The sideband had not really hit, but this is one of the reasons that it got going, because Wes was out there with his 10A, and guys were going down to Fair Radio and buying these type of transmitters, which were, they were aircraft transmitters at various frequencies, and they would take that and convert it to single sideband. And it was an amazing thing, and it sounded so good. Here's another one that this was one that was built. Both of those were built by Mark, and he did such a great job. This was K5LYN's a little 458 that Mark had built. Mark is an amazing guy. He's so amazing. I'm going to do a whole show on him, KG7TR. He's amazing. Then he had to go an extra step. I mean, Mark can't just do one thing. Look what he did with a pair of these. He took the 458 and built the transmitter to see on the left. But on the right, he got the receiver, and he coupled them together. And they became a transceiver. Now, this is just too cool. Way ahead of its time, but that's Mark. He's an incredible craftsman. But these are the things that happened in the early days. We were builders. And I really love it when I see things happen. There's Mark and his incredible Octomania. This thing is it's a transceiver built with octal tubes. They're not the little miniature ones. They're the bigger ones with 8-pin octals. And we're going to cover that at a later date, because it's just too much to say hello, goodbye. we'll do a whole show on that guy. It's really fabulous. But there again, we just had such good times in those days of building and sharing those things. This was, to me, the highlight of the weekend. You want to tell about this one, Nick?
That's the Central Electronics Ivanhoe novice rig prototype that was being built in the last months of Central Electronics' existence with Zenas Radio. And fortunately, this and its brother, there's another one, there's actually two prototypes, was spirited away by the actual designer of the set. And as you can see, it's quite unusual. It doesn't look like the typical Central Electronics equipment of the time. Zenith had hired an industrial design firm, Melvin Bolt and Associates, to develop a new look for Central Electronics radios. And unfortunately, this project in Central Electronics exited the amateur market in January of 1962. And this particular set, I believe would have sold quite well just because of its styling. And it had a number of unique features with which we demonstrated over at the event. And if you'd like to see it, you'll have to come next year.
Yeah, there you go. I think the next picture I had, this fascinated me. Now, understand, this is a crystal radio, crystal transmitter. Let's see. Did I have the next picture of that, Brian? I'm not sure I included that. What's interesting is behind those dials were the four crystals, and that whole dial face was on magnets, and you just pulled it away so you could change the crystals. You didn't have to get behind it or inside it. That was really cool. So we'll go back to Nick here for a little bit. Nick, I really appreciate you being here tonight, and I can't thank you for all that you have done to bring all of this history to amateur radio, and we want to prepare everybody. Hey, there's that picture. Note that how that front is on a magnet, and you just pick it off. You can see the crystals behind it. All the rigs in those days, Heathkit DX60, and even the ICO and stuff, you had to get behind them to change the crystals. Here, you lifted the dial off and it changed them. That was magnetic. I don't know quite how it all worked, but it worked. So there we go. And we really appreciate being able to share some of this. And I hope that you all enjoyed some of it. And I was just paging through. Check this out, Nick. I've carried this around for all these years. This was May 1957. And it was one of the first projects that I did that KMOX engineer helped me build. This was a 36 megacycle oscillator that we plugged into the crystal socket and tuned the coils to 6 meters. And that's how I got on 6 meter sideband in 1957. These were big deals. A lot of things in those days were, it was all guided and really focused on single sideband. And we were a part of that. And I love being able to share that with you. Nick, I appreciate you coming on, and we'll do it again when we want to continue on with some of the other stories and continue on for next year. You want to keep us posted because who knows what's going to happen next year, right?
We're already planning it and hope to have as many presentations as we did at this event. We had 11 different presentations, and they were all over the map in terms of the history of single sideband, how to build radios. I tell you, Mike Bone, KG7TR, he's just a phenomenal builder, and he explained it in a way that anybody could build. And I hope that when you have him on the show, it inspires people to go out and start building again. But his radios work spectacular, and it was really amazing. You showed that rig. The two radios coupled together. It was on 20 meters. He was working DX all over Europe with it. It was just fabulous. So it's amazing what you can do with a soldering iron and some tools.
Exactly. Hey, thanks a lot. It's really good to see you tonight. We had a wonderful weekend. Thank you, everybody that put it together. We'll catch up with you on one of the bands, and it's going to be with one of Wes Shum's Central Electronics gear. So thanks so much. I appreciate you being
here.
Okay,
thank you.
All right. Well, if you haven't figured it out yet, guys and gals, I'm really psyched about this weekend. It was so cool, and I just love the history of it. We'll keep you posted. I'll have some other reports coming down the line. So, Don, back to you, because I think you got something about reading books.
Listening to books, you know, because I've got this god-awful commute every day of 125-mile round trip, and audible.com and the audiobooks is an absolute godsend, and you're going to love it. Audible is leading provider of audiobooks across all types of literature. It doesn't matter what it is. It's in Audible. Fiction, nonfiction, periodicals, literature. They even offer language instruction and foreign language audiobooks. Now, and because you're a fan of Ham Nation, Audible will give you a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out the service. And one that you might consider downloading is, you know, I'm an old disc jockey. And so I really enjoy this band, Heart, Anna Nancy Wilson. And I thought it would be cool to talk about this, too, specifically since we kind of had ladies' night last week here on Ham Nation. We kind of let the ladies take over. And let me tell you something. Anna Nancy Wilson took over rock and roll in the mid-70s with Heart. This is a fascinating story. It talks all about what it's like to be a woman in rock and roll. Kicking and Dreaming is the name of the book. It's written by the Wilson sisters, and it is narrated by the Wilson sisters. Their own voices telling you their own story in their own words. And it is absolutely fascinating. I'm telling you, if you are a fan of rock and roll radio or of women vocalists, which I am a fan of both, you're really going to like this. A lot of inside stories, a lot of history, a lot of how it began. And, you know, the girls, they're still out. They're still out on tour. They're touring right now in support of a brand new album, Heart is. And if you ever get the chance to catch Heart in concert, you absolutely need to do that because it is an incredible show. But you're going to love this. Kicking and Dreaming, a story of heart, soul, and rock and roll. I promise you, you're going to like this book. So if you'd like to download this one for free or go online to audible.com and browse any other book of your choice, just do that. Go to audible.com/hamnation, audible.com/hamnation. I would tell you how many books they have, but I don't know. I don't know because they don't know, because they keep adding more books all the time. audible.com/hamnation. I'm telling you, you're going to love it. And it's great stuff. It's well worth the time, especially if you're like me and you've got that long commute. You're going to love audible.com, I promise you. I don't think they have any books on Smoke and Sauter. Now, I think probably if you search Sauter, there'd probably be something. If you search Smoke, there'd probably be something. Maybe Smoke on the Water, maybe the story of Deep Purple. I don't know. Could very well be. But let's go to Jackson, Mississippi. See, now that reminds me of another song I heard on the radio about Jackson. Ever since the fire went out, I'm going to Jackson. You don't want to hear me sing, but you do want to hear George talk, I think, probably. A good time to just segue right over
okay,
there.
Okay, Don, I'm going to have to go to Audible and see if they've got any Swamp Monster books, you know.
I bet they do.
Picture it right now in my head.
They do.
Just sitting here thinking about it.
Why, there's the cover of one now.
Narrated by Don Wilbanks. Well, I've got a couple of things to give away, but I wanted to give you an update on last week's Tales from the Transmitter site. I should have sent Brian a picture before the show of that tube that we showed last week. Really, really bad looking. Burn up, rusted, unlike any that I have ever seen before. Well, I got out the Scotch-Brite and a little bit of Tarnex and some Brasso brass polish, and I polished on that thing. And no, all that junk didn't come off, but some of it did. And I polished down the tube socket, too. Now, this was an auxiliary transmitter, you know, and I just needed something that I could put on the air for a little bit because it was time to change the tube in the main transmitter. Well, I put the tube back in, and lo and behold, the thing actually worked. And we just ran on it for a couple of days. Now, you know, I got to do something else. I'm living on borrowed time trying to run that old tube and that old transmitter now. But I wanted to show you what the tube and the newer transmitter looks like. This is an iMac YC-130. This is actually a rebuilt one. You know, these are pretty expensive. You can buy a rebuilt one for a little over $2,000. I just wanted to tell you a few of the specs on this thing right here. You know, you can get a little bit of power out of that. It runs on 7.5 volts AC filaments. And, of course, you'll need a couple of amps. to power a tube that size. The filaments draw 160 amps. The maximum operating temperature on this thing, and I would never run it anywhere near this hot, but the specs say 250 degrees Celsius. Well, the heat coming out of mine is below 200 Fahrenheit. The weight of that tube is right at 13 pounds. Maximum plate voltage is rated at 10,000 volts. Although that's interesting because the transmitter I'm using it in, I know will do almost 11,000 volts on the plate. So maybe exceeding that a little bit. Plate current, 5 amps. So if you're doing some calculating there, well, it actually should put out, as a Class C FM transmitting tube, 36.5 kilowatts. So nice little power output there in a fairly compact package. Takes 250 watts to drive it. And, well, this is pretty typical. It came out of a 35-kilowatt transmitter. I only need to make 30 kilowatts with it. You can see how it's kind of black around here on the top. And under the bottom here, that's kind of characteristic of one that's, you know, it's not quite 2 years old. That's about all the life you get out of it. They're nice and shiny and silver when they're brand new. But I thought it was interesting here, and this is what I wanted to mention. Bob, you could also use this thing as a audio frequency amplifier. You could have used this in your concert amps running at Class AB1. You could have gotten 57 kilowatts out of this tube for your PA system.
Yeah. Yeah. That would work.
That would work. It'd be okay heavy. Anyway, you know, we know that, you know, audio buffs like tube type gear. I may just have to save a couple of the old ones and throw me together a little stereo real quick. Well, last week I asked a question and I showed you that 3CX 15,000 A7 tube that was all crusted up, rusted and burned. I asked how many elements did that tube have in it? And we had, a number of people send in correct answers on that, but the random drawing can only have one winner, and that is Lewis Roberts, N3LER. And he said, George, that tube had three elements, anode, cathode, and grid, with two additional contacts for the filaments. And that's correct, Lewis. Congratulations. Oh, let me just say that on a tube like this, the filaments and the cathode are the same. There's no separate cathode connection on here. The filament acts as a cathode. So congratulations, Lewis. We're going to send you this MFJ. This is a 270 surge suppressor. It can handle up to 400 watts. They make a variety of them. This particular one has SO239s on it for mating with your PL259s. Great way to protect your gear from lightning and static surges. We'll be sending that to you right away. And for next week, I've got another prize here, and this one comes from our friends at DX Engineering. And it's a copy of the 2015 Contest University textbook. And you might say, well, George, this is 2016. That book's a year old. And yes, you're correct. But the information in it is still like brand new. As a matter of fact, they have these going back a number of years so that you can go back and look at all the great seminars and information that has been distributed at Contest University over the years. So, if you'd like to win this, well, then just answer this question for me. Which of the following is a safety hazard of a 12-volt storage battery? Your choices are A, touching both terminals with the hands can cause electrical shock. B, shorting the terminals can cause burns, fire, or an explosion. C, RF emissions from the battery, or D, all of these choices are correct. If you think you know what the safety hazard is for a 12-volt storage battery, send your answer to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could win the 2015 copy of the Contest University textbook, courtesy of Tim Duffy and all our friends over at DX Engineering. And now let's get Amanda in here and see what's going on in the chat room. I know you're bound to have some questions for Bob this week.
I am, actually. Thank you, George. And speaking one more thing about DX Engineering before I go to the questions. You guys, they just posted Val's interview with Tim Duffy from DX Engineering. So make sure you search for that online. I'm sure it's, I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but it was from Dayton, and I'm sure it's quite interesting. So you guys look for that. The first question I have, Bob, so nice to have you back. We have Don here. What was that, Bob?
I say it's good to be back. That's for sure.
Awesome. The first question I have is from Don, WB3BJU. He said he read a QST article about the 7300 that it uses 3 dB steps for S meter up to S9. Most all others use 6 dB steps. What does the group think of that change from ICOM? Any input?
No, you don't. You won't see any difference. 10 over 9 is 10 over 9. It might get there a little faster or a little slower, depending on which one. But don't worry about it. You guys worry about too many things like that. And 10 over S9 is 10 over S9. How many steps it takes? It works great.
Very good. And I have another question for you. And this comes from our Facebook page. You guys, of course, always, if you can't make the live show and you can't join us in chat, put some questions on Facebook on our page, Ham Nation on Twit, and I'll grab them and be sure to address them on the show here. So this comes from AB9ZD, and he says, I've enjoyed the discussions on audio mixers. Can an audio mixer be used to share one headset, such as a Heil Pro set, between several ICOM radios?
Absolutely. That's what I do here. I end up with, there's actually in, I don't know if you can see this. Let's see if we can do this. Maybe we can. Yeah. Here we go. This, there's a 7800. There's the 2000. There's a 7600. And here, let me really make it happen for you. We'll do that. And we'll do this. That's the 7600. And I didn't have that over here because I had this down here. I had it all set up for the other thing. There we go. There's the 7800, 7600. What's going on there? And the ELAD, the Mosley, but I don't have them on right now. But I seldom use the radio's volume controls, the AF controls. Can I do them all from here? This mixer has a 3-band parametric EQ. And it drives the pair of control 2-piece. It's really great. And there's a headphone jack, and you could use the headphone and do the same thing. Bring up each radio as you need. You can have them all on at the same time. And I can't tell you how cool it is. You should all be doing this, and it works well. You can have a whole new world of hearing any kind of signal by you being able to equalize it. So that's what you want to look to.
Very good. Well, thank you so much. By the way, I can't help but notice that you are talking through a very fancy looking microphone. What do you got there?
Oh, this is our heritage. We've had it in and out of the line several times, but we keep getting more and more requests for it. Now it comes in black with a different color screen. This is a chrome one. This is the Elvis model. But it really works well, the heritage. And we're finding a lot of groups are using it out on the stage. But a lot of hams are using it because it's got that good old vintage look, especially the black one. The black one is really cool. So check it out. It's on the website, the heritage.
Well, thank you, Bob. I like it. It looks pretty fancy there, actually. And George, my next question is for you. And that came from WB3BJU as well. He says, how many times can a tube like that be rebuilt from what you were showing us earlier?
And that is an excellent question, of which I don't have an exact answer. I know the rebuilders say that they can rebuild them a number of times. I think what they do is they cut the tube open at, somewhere along here. They change all the elements out that are inside of it, replace it with new guts, and then they, they weld it all back together, pull a vacuum on it, and send it back out again. But I think the problem becomes that sometimes you can get some arcing and stuff on here that could prevent it from being rebuilt again. And also, every time they rebuild it, it cuts down and gets a little bit shorter. So eventually, I think they're going to have to throw one in the trash, but they say they can do it quite a few times.
Very good. And my next question, Mr. Don, not only does he have the coolest Trans Am in the ham world, you also have gone through quite a few vehicles in your lifetime. And my question is specifically for you. Yeah, that's right. Can you come? No, I was going to ask if you could come wax my car. That's not what I'm asking. I'm selling my car. Absolutely not. Okay. Selling my car, I'm taking my antennas off of the car. How do I cover up those holes? What do you use? I know you've been there several times.
Hey, Don, I think you're muted there, buddy.
Muted.
Pardon me. All right. I didn't drill holes in mine, so I can't really speak to that, but I know that, I've gone to the various county auctions and police auctions and stuff, and they sell the used police cars, and they've all got, you can go and buy plugs specifically for the holes that are drilled in there. So I would imagine you go down to Radio Shack or some other place that sells those hole plugs, throw a little silicone on there and put it in there. Now, of course, if you really want to fix it the right way, you're going to weld those up. And you're going to, but that's very expensive and very time consuming. It involves paint and body work and everything else. But if you're just going to, if you just got a few holes on the roof, just go down and get you some nice rubber plugs or those plastic plugs and make sure you silicone them up real good so you don't get any water incursion in there. And that's
okay.
Should do it.
Yeah. We're selling. If anyone remembers when I showed when Jeff got pulled over looking like a cop, I'm selling the Grand Prix. So, neither one of us, it just didn't even cross our mind. Oh yeah, we're taking off the antennas. Now we have these big old holes in there because Jeff is addicted to NMO mounts. I know everyone has their opinion about
that. Why would anyone
want to
sell a Pontiac? Why would you want to sell a Pontiac?
Honey, it's just that time. We're looking for a small four-wheel drive. So it's a supercharger and everything. I really actually like the car, but I drive 2 miles to work, so I don't need a supercharger to go through.
I drive 125 round trip. I could use that. I'd never be late for work.
That's so funny. And it's a pretty good car, actually. Just the two owners, my parents had it, and then we bought it from them. So anyhow, thanks for the advice, Don. Just look for some plugs and silicone, that's what you say. We're definitely not going to like do the Bondo and sand it out.
Now they make rubber. I mean, there are rubber plugs that you can go. I mean, Jeff has got to be friends with the cops. I mean, hell, he's a fireman. Have him go down and talk to the radio guys who install and maintain the radios in the fire on the fire apparatus and the police cars. I'm sure they'll probably hand him a whole handful.
You're right. You know what? I bet they will. The main installer, actually, we have such a small town here. The main installer isn't from this town, so they're about 40 miles away. But I bet they have some in a stupid drawer somewhere in a garage.
He's connected. Yeah. He can get them.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Don.
And thank him for me and for all of us watching for his service, would you please?
I absolutely will. He will really appreciate that. He's actually... he's on the night shift right now, but that's about to change. So he's on his 12-hour shift right now, and he'll be home at 6 a.m. No, 7 a.m. He has an hour drive home. So thank you so much, Don. He really appreciates that. You guys, that's the questions. I didn't get any announcements tonight. No upgrades or no new technicians, nothing. So, Bob, really nice to have you back. And that's all I have. So I'll send it back to you.
Very good. Well, it's been a great show. And I know there's been a lot of information passed. So hope you've been taking notes. We'll see you back here next week. And our same situation of trying to get great information about the most wonderful hobby in the world. So thanks to everybody. Brian, we appreciate all your help and everybody in the chat room that helped guide us along. And especially to the main twit, Leo Laporte, to keep the whole situation on the air. We'll see you back here next week. For now, we'll head off to some of the bands. I know 40 is really rough tonight, and who knows where we'll be. But we'll look out somewhere for you. Have you got any frequencies at all? Amanda, have you found anything that's working?
Yeah, so I know what's broken, and 40 meters, unfortunately, is broken. KC7FPF has told us it's a no-go. 40 meters. We needed Dr. T on here tonight. She would have told us, hey, you guys, don't even bother. 40 meters is dead. So that's a no-go. I'm looking. I think the last thing I saw was 14,282 for 20 meters. And, of course, we have the Dewdrop In for Echolink and 14 Charlie for D-Star.
I saw a post in the chat room that somebody posted, and I don't remember who it was, and I can't scroll up to find it again, but somebody said that there was a they got from another solar weather source, not necessarily Dr. T this time, but hey, any port in a storm, that one of the coronal holes had just issued a big batch of solar wind. It was headed this way, so that may be impacting us now. So that could be why the bands are all tore up. But of course, D-Star and Echolink works, and you just heard that, 355-814 Charlie. So get on and support our digital nets if you can't support our analog nets.
Absolutely.
Okay. Excellent. All right. 7-3, everybody. We're going to get out of here and see what is working. We'll find something that works. And see you back here next week. This is K9EID in the Ozarks. Bye-bye for now.